Hi, and welcome to Prague Will Find a Way, our podcast on all things progressive music. I'm Jonathan Block.
And I'm Jay Vallade.
And today, and actually for the next couple of episodes, we're going to take a look at Jethro Tull.
Jethro Tull.
So, Ian Anderson obviously has been the driving force of Jethro Tull, but a lot of great musicians have passed through the band. Just a quick history. So, Jethro Tull emerges out of the John Evan Band, and
yes,
a lot of people were in that band that ended up in Tull over the years, and we'll kind of cover that as we go along. Obviously, they started as a blues band, which is evident on the first album. This was,
yes,
with original
1968
with original guitarist Mick Abrams,
yes,
and Glenn Cornick on bass and Clive Bunker on drums.
So yeah, I listened to that album. I kind of did a let's go through this. John is much more that we're back to what we were dealing with the Pink Floyd situation.
I'm just gonna adjust his microphone a little. There was a don't mind us, sir. We're trying to be a little more mobile with some lavaliers here. So
I, in a broad sense, know Tull from more of the greatest hits, the Living in the Past, the MU, the box sets, than every individual
says
album.
Says the guy with like 80 Tull vinyls. Yeah, I'm not that familiar with them, but you know, but I got Too Old to Rock and Roll, Too Young to Die on vinyl.
But I didn't like dive into them as much, like, right, and listen to those albums over and over and over like I did with some of the other prog, right?
Let's be honest. When we, you know, growing up and listening to Prague, it was like, you know, if Yes came out with it or Tull came out with an album, you're not going to listen to it, you know?
No, I listened to it, but like some albums,
I'm talking about all of us.
Over and over and over and over to learn every note. I never did that with Tull. And I kind of got to know them more from these greatest hits packages.
Yep.
So I went back and over the past couple of weeks, just started listening from the beginning. And as you said, the blues of This Was is not what Tull became at all,
right,
for me. It seems like a standalone moment for them.
Yeah, and I mean, the song that's always pulled from that album is Song for Jeffrey, which,
yes,
is a little less blues, I guess you'd say. Jeffrey being Jeffrey Hammond, again, yeah, the John Evan Band, who eventually was a friend of the band, eventually ended up playing bass, but yeah, it's very blues heavy. But you can kind of tell already that, like, it's the Ian Anderson. I mean, in retrospect, like, that was never anybody's first Tull album, right? But when you listen, yeah, to it, you can kind of hear, yeah, that's not going to last. I mean, Ian Anderson's already trying to get beyond that with, you,
yeah,
know, Serenade for Cuckoo. And there's his songs are, while blues based, but I mean, you could even argue to the next album, right? Stand Up. It's very blues based too. So, anyways, This Was obviously the first album. It's out there now, the deluxe version, which Stephen Wilson has actually remixed this one, as he did all the Tull ones, and you get a mono version and everything else. There's some good songs on there, and they revisited a lot of those songs over the years, but,
yeah,
you knew it wasn't going to last. And, you know, Mick Abrams wants to do blues, so he quickly leaves, and they just do auditions, and they get Martin Barr in.
And so they get to stand up,
which is
kind of cool. We'll stand up inside.
You'll remember that. Folks will remember that. And there's CD versions where you get that as well. You know, and it was a popular album. When they played songs from this album through the 70s, people would scream, you know, when they,
yeah,
start Nothing Is Easy. And,
yeah,
it goes on and on and on. So many good songs on here. Another Jeffrey song,
yeah,
you know, Jeffrey Goes to Leicester Square. And Boré, I mean, right?
You're right.
It's very Tull. But it has that, or, you know, it still has that late 60s quality.
But it's also, you know, for those who are not huge Tull fanatics,
yep,
the flute man.
Well,
I mean, everybody
is...
says the flute. He doesn't play it like it's a classical instrument.
No, not at all. No.
It's much more percussive and
right. And you know, I'll give him props that he did Serenade to a Cuckoo, because that's Roland Kirk. I mean, the breathing through it, the voice and the whole thing.
Yeah,
he's more, you know, Ian. Ian Anderson to me is just one of those people that's just a creative person. It doesn't matter what he applies himself to. It's going to be cool. So he played the flute. Then he also picks up the saxophone, right? You know, and he's doing this and he's doing that.
That's always the knock on Tallis. Oh, the flute is the lead instrument.
It's not really the lead instrument. It's particularly in
the colors the music for sure.
And there's solos,
but you think of it as like, oh, the flute is the lead thing. That's what they're known for. Right. And it kind of discredits the rock aspect.
Well, it does because
of the music.
Well, of course, because even their most popular song, Aqualung.
Yeah.
How much flute is on it? Right?
It's in there.
Yeah,
right?
Of course it's in there, but it's not like Songs from the Wood or something else where it is part of the melody. And to me, that was more live. Like, he was a little more flair of the dramatic. I mean, he was a performer.
Absolutely.
Again, one of those bands that doesn't do a lot for me live, you know?
Okay.
Just doesn't. The studio, I love all the studio stuff, but let's keep going.
Sure.
So Stand Up, obviously a popular album.
Yep.
A lot of stuff's happening. They're touring a lot. And then they record Benefit.
Yes.
Which was a popular album at the time too. So in that era, right, your first album might be a slow burner and then you could get popular really quick. And a lot of it was revolving around touring. I mean, they were touring over here. They were touring there. They're playing the whole album. John Evan now shows up playing piano on Benefit. So Ian's trying to expand the sound there already. I like that album a lot. There's so many good songs on that album. It sounds more like old Toll than newer Toll or 70s Toll, but it still is just a really, really good album.
And this is 1970.
Songs. 1970. So, you know, they're like a lot of bands, touring album, and partying. Well, Ian's not partying, but a lot of the other guys are. So at this point in time, Ian starts to think that he wants somebody else in the band on bass rather than Glenn Cornick. So the story is always that, you know, Glenn was a big partier and it was interfering. I mean, it kind of came, Ian seems a little more open about it now. And it was as much like I was going back writing music. Those guys were partying. I felt like I didn't have anybody to hang out with on the road. So
yeah.
I want somebody I know. Right. So he gets John, Jeffrey Hammond in, and he teaches, you know, who says he can't play bass and kind of teaches him, but he's another guy who can play music. So he plays the bass and he becomes a bass player on Aqualung.
His
first album that he plays bass on is Aqualung, right? So we go to Aqualung 1971. They just explode at this time.
Yes. I mean, that is for those who are peripheral.
Yep.
That's the album everybody knows.
Right.
Right?
Yep. That is the album that everybody knows.
It's got Aqualung on it. Yep. It's got Locomotive Breath.
Cross-Eyed Mary.
I mean, those were like
the three big ones.
Classic rock songs.
And right.
Everybody.
Yep. But it's a great album. I mean, there's a lot of levity in there with the more acoustic bass tunes. My God, it had already been played on the Benefit tour multiple times. And there's actually an earlier recorded version of it out there now because we're going to move from here, right? So Clive Bunker is still the drummer and popular album. They tore it the whole nine yards and then Clive leaves. So I think Clive had enough of touring, wanted to do family.
Okay.
He doesn't stop music. He ends up showing up with a bunch of other bands like Steve Hillage and stuff like that. But more, I think, in staying and touring England, Europe rather than coming over to America. So once again, we go back to the John Evan band to get Barrymore Barlow on drums.
Yeah.
Who is of a different, like, when you're talking about musicians, he is such a different player than Clive Bunker was. I mean, Clive is still more of the 60s, a little on the backbeat, whereas, you know, Barrymore Barlow's, he's doing the 70s prog thing and doing it very well. Doing it very well.
So that is after Aqualung.
That's after the Aqualung tour, before Thick as a Brick. So Ian's writing Thick as a Brick. So then they're Toll is very popular in the U.S. now.
Oh, yeah.
Aqualung.
And they're touring like crazy.
They're touring like crazy. So that's why they put together Living in the Past. Because don't forget, a lot of the earlier popular Toll songs were singles. They weren't on albums. Witch's Promise, right? There's a lot of songs at that point in time, not just for Tool, but for a lot of bands where they were just releasing singles in England and they wouldn't be, I mean, the Beatles are famous for that too, and then they wouldn't be on an album. So Living in the Past collects a lot of the stuff. And for, you know, a lot of us fans in the US, that was the first we heard some of it. Yeah. And then of course they have the live side of From Carnegie Hall, which I'm sorry, when that album came out and I heard it, I was like, really? You're going to make one side live and you're putting this piano solo on and a drum solo. And that's what you're doing, right? So, but an amazing album and really was a good tee up. And then Barrymore Barlow shows up on that album. So that's where he first, because there's the EP, but that's the other thing that they're like between... The amount of Life is a Long Song, right? That's another, like the amount of music that's coming out. So they put out Life is a Long Song EP, like four or five songs, and Barry's on those. And this is all in like a 1.5 year period, right? And then Thick as a Brick comes out.
They have so much material. That was, I think, the hardest thing for me was I was just like, the greatest hits does it because I don't even know where to jump.
It's a deluge.
In.
Well, I think with them.
What were they putting out an album every 6 months or something?
It did seem like that because Aqualung comes out, then Living in the Past comes out, then Thick as a Brick comes out. Yeah. And then, you know, we'll talk about Thick as a Brick. But I don't even know if it was a year later that Passion Play comes out. And then we learn years later that he had already written it. There's a whole unheard album. It's insanity. It's no wonder. Like I can see now why these guys just petered out after. It's like, you can't sustain that for somebody like Ian Anderson. You cannot sustain that level of.
Let's look at from 68 to 73. Let's call it. Right?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Seven, Living in the Past. Did you get Living in the Past?
No,
Seven.
It's not on here.
So you get Living in the Past. That doesn't include the singles, the EPs, all this other stuff. It's crazy. Tool in particular is one of those bands that I look at like, you know, it doesn't. Sometimes it bothers me like bands like you get off the bus at some point, right? And you're like, maybe I'll listen to them again. Maybe I'll listen to them again. And like Tool peters out for lots of people in the mid 80s. Okay.
Yeah.
Peters out for people. And then we perked up again for Roots and Branches.
Best of an Age.
Well, yes. But even after that, Roots and Branches, right? The end of 90. And it's like, oh my God, man. But whatever. But it's okay. Like now I'm like, I understand why you can't, like, you have 5 years of amazing music. You can't ask for more, right? Like ELP, it's okay. It's okay that ELP really only has two or three albums that people are going to remember.
Yeah.
That's all you need. That stuff is amazing. You don't have to have a 50-year career of amazing albums. Everybody doesn't have to do that. But like you said, that compressed time period and the amount of material is just unbelievable.
So where do you stand on editing and should they have only put out the three
ELP or
no
oh, oh like Tool. No I'm Tool. the songs that I don't like, I can't even say I don't like them. I mean, there's stuff on Stand Up and Benefit which normally I'd be like, yeah, I don't really care for that. And I'll give you one example. And then like the because I talked about it, the Living in the Past release came out. I've been listening to that a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, Inside from Benefit is on there. And that's not one of the songs ever. And I'm like, actually, that's a pretty good tune, you know? in this day and age, we're still constrained by 40 minutes. So it's okay, right?
Yeah.
I'm okay. I'm actually okay with all of the Tool output in the classic years.
Okay.
I mean, there's some albums I like more than others.
Sure.
But I'm more impressed by the Aqualung. Yeah, I don't like every song, but I can't complain. And now we're on Thick as a Brick, which is my favorite Tool album. And yeah, sometimes it's like, I don't want to hear this bit, you know, or I'm, you know, but as an album as a whole, this was my entree into Tool. So at religious school, you know, this is the 70s, they had a record player and records. And one of the records they had was Thick as a Brick. And I remember seeing it one day. This had to be like 76, probably.
Oh, when you heard it.
When I heard it. And let me go back, because I'd heard Aqualung and all that stuff on the radio. I'd heard that on the radio because I listened to the radio all the time. But it had this, right? And I'm like, we didn't know anything. I'm like, what is this? And who is this? And the music is amazing. And then my brother had gotten like Brain Cell Surgery, and I had a cassette that had Thick as a Brick on one side and Brain Cell Surgery on the other. I was like 12, 11, 10. I don't even remember. And all I did was listen to that tape. But I love this album. It's such...
It's kind of, and this whole thing that it's a newspaper is
the whole package, right?
It's
whole,
awesome.
It is so wild. It's just so wild.
And then
you got the album.
All right. So who is on this?
So this album is the classic line. This is essentially the classic lineup of Ian, Martin Barr, Jeffrey Hammond on bass, John Evan on keyboards, and Barry Moore Barlow on the drums. So this is like the classic.
Yeah. And John Evan. Is all over this album.
Oh yeah, the keyboards.
Oh my gosh, the keys are.
Yeah, the keys
are.
Yeah, and I love it because we're not into the synth age yet. You know, we're still like it's organ, piano, and that he was such
and
a good player.
And this is 1972.
Oh yeah, and then they tore it. They tore it and play the whole thing.
And this is one song per side.
Yes, it is.
One song split over two.
Yes,
sides.
It is. And I mean, come on, you know, it's. It's like, it's so funny because you can't not take yourself seriously and create music like this, but he also has such an edge where he has no qualms poking fun at himself too.
Right.
Because he doesn't, you know, it's just so dramatic.
He is.
And the whole album to him was a joke. It's like people were talking about Aqualung being a concept album and you're a prog band and this and that. And of course he's, no, we're not, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, so F them all. I'll show you. I'll show you. And I, you know, and he writes what's not the first. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of it. What was it? Were there albums before that that was essentially one song for the whole album? And I'm having a hard time. I could be wrong. Come on, prog heads, get in the comments and let us know. Was this the first full album? Like, obviously, you know, like a Close to the Edge is a half and things of that nature. So, yeah. And they're going strong. They're mega popular. They're touring everywhere. They're playing the whole freaking album.
Look. How could you not?
How could you not? And like that was apparently wasn't enough for Ian. He's got to write yet another one. And this is where it gets really murky. So Ian's not a partier. So he's writing music on tour. And they come back from the Thick as a Brick tour and they're going in the studio and they start recording and it's not going well at all. So they're recording in Paris or they're recording in France at the Chateau de Herville, which apparently everybody calls the Chateau Disaster. So,
yes.
And we find out years later through your 20th years box that they actually recorded over an album's worth of material, but wasn't happy with it, shelves it all, rewrites Passion Play, doesn't use a lot of that. Actually, there's a fair amount of that music that ends up on War Child.
Okay.
And then they come out with Passion Play, which is like
another
long
full song.
One, a little musically, a little more complex and a lot more depth. There's synths on there. Ian picks the saxophone up, and on the saxophone, it's not just flute, it's saxophone. And, you know, like they did with Thick as a Brick and pulled out a part for one of the greatest hits out.
Yeah.
They start pulling out, excuse me, the edits too. I like Passion Play. And when I was younger, that was my favorite Toll album. I like that even more than Thick as a Brick. It is really a fantastic album. And it's
listening to it for the first time in years and years and years, I really enjoyed it. There's that weird, like, Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah, the hair loss, his spectacles.
Yeah. Which I could do without, but aside from that,
right?
And that's just me personally.
Yeah,
I like that album. I was like, oh, those two albums, and of course, this is the not even knowing that they're just one long song. It could be like 15 songs strung together, but it's, you know,
what I like about that album a lot, and is that musically it's so rich, but. That for all the music, like level of music skill that they had, like most of their stuff is songs. It's singing,
yes.
And there's not. And then that opens with essentially an overture, like a three or 4 minute. And it's like, because we had gotten for later on Living in the Past, which people say that was like the germ of Thick as a Brick. And there's some stuff, but it was like 2 minutes long, but it's an instrumental. It's like, wow, we finally, I mean, of course, Bore, but I mean, where they're kind of, you know, going full bore. And then Passion Play, it kind of starts, and then they just,
yeah,
and it's just so Tull, you know, it just has that Tull sound. And I love it. Musically, I love that album. And they did that album live too, and did The Hare Who Lost His Spectacles live. So, and I think it was that album. So they got pretty showman-like, like, yeah, well, for these albums. And the Passion Play tour, they played both albums. They played Passion Play. So before Floyd's out there doing, you know, Wish You Were Here and Dark Side, and then Wish You Were Here and Animals, Tull's out there playing a few years before Thick as a Brick and Passion Play, the full albums. And then I think they did more too. They did like four or five or six others. Like,
yeah.
Unbelievable.
And the audiences were eating it up.
They were eating
apparently.
It up. I, as you can tell, because I'm like dominating these conversations, like these bands. We got to get back. We got to do a Jay episode again. Jay episodes. Tull was a band that I like when I was a kid.
I know.
Tull and ELP were like for a number of years, like my two favorite bands, because I got into Thick as a Brick, and then I'm really into Thick as a Brick. And it was that summer, I think it would be the summer of 77, where I'm listening to that, and I'm listening to that Works comes out, and yeah, I'm listening to that. And then Songs from the Wood comes out.
Yeah. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
And I don't care, okay? Because I'm talking about, this is really Thick as a Brick though, when I got to it. And then we've talked about this before, because like Thick as a Brick and then the Songs from the Wood, and it's so different, right? It's so
yeah,
different. But you're right, we're getting ahead
but
of ourselves.
So it is different, but it's still the
Tull,
same hand. You can, you're not going to mistake
it's
it for anybody else but Jethro Tull.
Okay, so 1970, it's different. It's as different in the sense as Close to the Edge as to a Going for the One. It's the
yes,
same thing.
Yes, yes.
Sounds
yes, yes,
change, the instrumentations change, and the yeah, studios change.
Yes.
But anyways, they're still riding high, Passion Play.
Sure.
And not even a year goes by and they do War Child. That I can understand now, because a lot of that stuff was around. However, way more was around, because when we get the deluxe version now with the Steven Wilson remix, there's like an entire separate album. There's actually streaming. Yeah. It's called War Child 2. And there's
this is where I always have trouble when I'm going back and I'm streaming albums, yeah, is because I'm not as well versed in the actual canon and the original yeah, stuff. Where did the original album stop, and where did all the extra tracks?
So the original album, it starts with War Child,
yeah,
the first song, and the last song is to the Lick Your Finger, Two Fingers.
Yeah.
Two Fingers. So that's where it ends.
Okay.
So
War Child has Skating Away and Bungle in the Jungle.
Those are the popular ones, and they were yeah, damn popular. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely a more commercial sounding album. The album never resonated with me, but naturally, I mean, I've been into the long things, and all of a sudden we get songs. That's not to say I didn't like it. And there's like Sea Lion, the first side run. So War Child is okay, but Queen and Country is good. Ladies, and then the Backdoor Angels into Sea Lion is really good too. And
you love it all.
I love it all. But it's not my favorite album, and I rarely listen to it.
Yeah.
What I listen to more, because they pulled it out, is this. So you really got two full extra albums out of this Passion Play to War Child theory. Yeah. You get Passion Play, you get War Child. Now we have, it's called on streaming, if you've never seen it, it's called War Child 2.
Oh, and they popped Rainbow Blues as a piece, as an extra, because that shows up on MU as a...
Exactly. Yeah. Just like Glory Row, which is the other one from that period.
Yeah.
So now you have, there's a War Child 2 out with a lot of the bonus stuff.
Okay.
Then for a Record Store Day, they put out all the Chateau Disaster stuff
in
the order that it was supposed to be in. That ends up being an album and a half. And then they put, I think, some of the remix stuff that they had done for this on there. So you get two bonus albums. So yeah, some of the material is not the best, but also he was going to make War Child into like a show or something. So there's a lot of orchestral stuff too. And it's like, people cannot absorb all this music you're doing, obviously, because it took 30 more years for it to come out. But that whole period,
this is kind of what
I'm
saying.
Insanity.
There's just so much.
But it doesn't stop. They keep going. So
because right, next is Minstrel in the Gallery.
Which is another one of my top, that is a really, really good album. And that's where you start getting a little more of that kind of English countryside feel.
Yeah.
the folky feel that's going to kind of bubble up even more. But that album from top to bottom is an amazing album.
So that's where I get, I think that's where these are bands you have to spend time with.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't just do what I just did and listen to them straight through and
right,
really digest them.
Well, and you do, and there are some things you lose on the greatest hits, like Minstrel in the Gallery. They lop off the whole instrumental intro, and it just starts with the doom doom with the cowbell part, not that whole you know that part. You all know exactly what I'm talking about. That's the funny thing about prog, right? Everybody knows what I'm talking about. But that first couple of minutes, I mean, you know, and it's like, whoa. But I understand what you're saying, because you get Baker Street Muse, which is like 15, 16 minutes. And if you're not familiar with it, even the first time you listen to it, you're going to be like, at some point, your attention is going to start wandering. But it's classic Tool, almost a not a template, but like other albums, like even Apple. That's what I mean. You got the heavy songs. Yes. Then you got the Jess Ian and some orchestration. Then the little acoustic bass. It's like very rich musically, at least for me.
So because of that, that there is this sort of template. Is there one that's better than the other that should just, you know, it's like, you love it or you kind of do what I do and you like pick one that you really like and you just latch onto that one.
Right. Tool is like one of those bands too. And we feel the same way about different bands. We also feel the same way about similar bands. And there's these periods where it's like, I may not like this particular album, but like that is such a strong run of albums. I can't, because I'm like that a little.
Discount
I'm like
it.
That a little with Yes, you know. So I love Close to the Edge. I love Relayer. Like those are the two out of that classic period. If you're going from Yes album to going for the one, I personally love Tormato, but the Relayer and that are ones I'm going to listen to the most. I respect the other ones and they're great. It's the same thing with Tool. Even now, like. Yeah. You know, I'll go for Minstrel in the Gallery or something. I don't listen to Aqualung that much. I don't even listen to Passion Play that much, you know, but Thick as a Brick, though, there'll be times where I'm like, I want to freaking listen to Thick as a Brick. Like there's few albums that I say, I actually want to listen to that. Not like I come upon it or I hear, I'm like, yeah, I should listen to that. That's one of those albums, but I'm getting far afield here. I should look, where are we time wise? You know what? Why don't we stop here and we'll pick back up, finish up Minstrel in the Gallery on the next episode. Oh, you want to wrap up Minstrel?
Let's do Minstrel and Too Old. And
We'll start with the folky. The folk trilogy. Okay.
So after Minstrel comes Too Old to Rock and Roll, Too Young to Die.
As a child, I could not understand that album and there was very little I liked at the time. Now I like it a lot more after the Steven Wilson remix, which by the way, if you don't know, the Steven Wilson remix is actually not the original album. They could not find all of the original album.
Okay.
So the thing he remixed is actually a re-recording they did for a TV show of the entire album. It's very similar, but it's not the same. And then the four or five songs that they did have the tapes, he did that as well.
It's
an interesting album. He finally, you know, it's another concept album. And it's, you know, it's essentially about an old rocker who is trying to remain relevant. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I'm not going to say it's a strange concept. It's a very elemental storyline, to be completely honest. And I could never really get behind it. And the title song was the first song we heard. And I was like, this is Tool? Right? It was like, oh, God, Tool's going something. And I'm not digging this at all.
That's kind of how I felt as I was listening to it directly as I listened to these in order directly after Minstrel. I was like, oh, it sounds like they're trying to go commercial, but I really don't like the songs as much.
Right. But there are some killer tunes on here. No, Quiz Kid is good.
For those of you who are watching this and you hear John say, and then he looks at the songs and he gets enthusiastic and loves them.
But it's not the whole album, but the first couple of songs particularly. So Crazed Institution, I think, is a classic Tool tune. Seriously, if you're not that familiar with this album or you have a negative view, listen to Crazed Institution. Because for me, it's a classic Tool song. It's a classic Tool song. And then there's other ones, too, that not the storyline. If you don't listen to the storyline and you don't listen to the lyrics within that.
Yeah.
You know, even Taxi Grab is pretty good in relation to as a Tool song, not as part of this whole thing.
Well, so what's kind of interesting is, you know, MU comes out
Yeah.
And it kind of wraps up everything before this, right?
Correct.
And so that's kind of my history
was
with
Tool. Was Tool to Rock and Roll Too Young to Die on MU or not? I can't remember. If not, then it's on what was the other one called? It would have been on side two.
Yeah. No, Fat Man, Living in the Past, Passion Play.
Okay, so it was before.
Skating Away.
Okay.
Rainbow Blues and Nothing is Easy.
Yeah, by the way, they put out these 80 albums in 2 years and a greatest hit. So.
Yeah.
So it was the next one, the one where it's like that outline of him in blue, like kneeling with the flute. I never got that.
So
I'm going to look that up while we're talking because it's sacrilege that I can't remember what that was.
So yeah, I kind of knew the stuff from MU, and then this kind of period in the middle that we're going to talk about on our next episode is where I kind of didn't have as much familiarity at the time.
Okay. All right. So let's wrap up here. The compilation, right? It was the first one. It's not even in here. So they consider it a can. I love the way they consider some of these albums. I can't find it. They don't even have MU on here.
All right.
I thought it was. All right. Anyways, I'll look.
Prague will find a way.
Yeah.
If you wanted to.
If you wanted to.